Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Now, Podcast One brings you Spike's Car Radio, a downloadable Cars and Coffee, hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast, Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
Hey everybody, Spike's Car Radio, welcome to the show. It's good to be back behind the microphone. I'm back from my very big European vacation, Zuckerman. Lago di Como, the Villa d'Este trip from the watch company, E Lunga Un Son. I can't say enough good things about what this trip was like. You know, when I think it was Ben Clymer from Houdinki who recommended me and told me that this was it's hard to believe that this is real when you're there. This whole event, not just the car show, but the events around the car show, the Riva boats, the vintage cars, the hotels, the food. And he was right. It was like a dream sequence. This is a dream vacation that I never thought I would take, and I didn't know it till I would get there. Everywhere you looked was beauty. Everywhere you looked was cars, these rare old cars. They limited the show to 50. And just to give you like an idea of a day, right? You show up there. The CEO of E Lunga Un Son is there. They give you watches to wear for the weekend, $20,000 and $30,000 beautiful watches that you immediately fall in love with. You look outside, there's a fleet of these vintage cars to take up and down the lakeside whenever you like. And I hop in a 1952 Fiat Ermini Sport 1100, something I didn't know anything about. I'm like, oh, I've got to get one of these. They go, no, there's only three. So I'm guessing this is a very valuable car.
The Ermine.
The Ermine. But it's, you know, it's 52 Fiat. So gas, right? The first thing you know is just the gas smell coming off the engine. It's about 75. It's humid. And I'm just racing up in Italian traffic. Buses coming at us. Roads that narrow to fit one car. And I'm in heaven. I'm in heaven, Zuckerman. And then I'm in a Riva boat. I don't even remember the name of it. But this Riva boat on this beautiful lake. And I'm looking at the guy driving the boat, right? The Italian guy driving the boat. And he's got – not like America, right, who you would imagine be driving this boat in Florida. Not a slob. He's got some nice trousers on. He's got a white polo and he's got a blue bomber jacket. Okay. No shoes. Won't let anybody wear shoes or socks in the boat, which I love. And I'm looking at the dash of this boat and it's perfection.
Been in the family for 50 years.
Patinated perfection. Every knob is yellowed, but none of them are nicked up. And even his little Riva flag is like that perfect pair of worn-in jeans. And I just like the pride this guy had in his boat. Anyway, thank you, E Lunga Un Son, for giving myself and my wife one of the greatest weekends. I don't think this could be eclipsed as far as a car and watch guy weekend.
So does it make Pebble Beach dog shit?
It does. In a different way, it does. This is it's a smaller event over a couple of days. This one ends in a bunch of people in tuxedos, a black tie dinner. If you follow me on Instagram, you saw that that's when the rain came and swamped two of the winning cars, an old Bugatti and Alex Finnegan's Ferrari. He just restored 335, which won the big event. We're all inside. Nobody noticed it was raining cats and dogs. And I mean, like, this is not rain I've seen before. and nobody's got the top on. So then there are guys in tuxedos desperately trying to put the top on while other swells are smoking cigars and cigarettes and laughing and shooting it. And I was
swells.
One of those. Lots of swells, Zuckerman. Lots of swells.
Were you out of place? Did you belong there?
No, because we had – everybody was so welcoming, but there were journalists there. I was in my party for the watch company. We had Alan Decadenay, the famous race car driver, and his wife. I had my wife there. There were customers of Alunga and Son. There were journalists and photographers. I loved it. I loved every second of it.
Over
Zuckerman.
The top.
And it was just – we were scheduled out from morning to night.
If you wanted to go there on your own, what would you do?
It would never be as good as what we did, but that's because of the watch company. What you do is you check in one of the hotels, and you have the greatest weekend of your life. It's that weekend where you wear your most insane loafers and shirts. It's a very stylish, incredible thing that is not like Pebble Beach, where you're driving around from event to event in traffic, and it's, you know, this is just wonderful. I don't know how else to describe it, but you have to see it once in your life.
And the Italians pull it off.
It's the hotels that really pull it off. The Italians make it wonderful. Like I said to Erica, it's like, you know, not to denigrate the United States, but every little place that we stop, like the Riva boat guy or the souvenir lady, of which there's just one near our hotel, that's their life. And they took great pride in what they did. Every little food seller, this is what it take. Great. There were no minimum wage employees, just, you know, as my shift over type attitudes. And that bleeds into the whole event. I mean, aside from the incredible scenery in Lago di Como, in Lake Como, which I had never been there. You know, when we stayed a few days in Milan, which was very urban and had a nice time, and we came out there, I've never seen a place like this. And it's not completely destroyed by tourism yet. And I'm sure I'm contributing to that right now by making a lot of you go. But I get why Clooney's there. I get why anybody would be there.
It's very removed. There's several large lakes up there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I ever told you this, but after I took the bar exam, I sent a motorcycle over to Europe. This was in 1991, and I drove all through Europe, including through Lake Como, Lake Garda, that area, in a 91, pre-internet, very sleepy, very, very removed. And I'm sure they have a season there. They have a season 3 or 4 months, and then it goes into hibernation.
Right. Well, I think it does rain there a lot. We just happened to catch that perfect week. You know, and I don't know. I just said to Erica, and she throws events for our schools and political events, and obviously I'm a producer, so it went off without a hitch, what Alunga and Sonia did. And I don't think I'll ever do anything as great as that weekend.
Really?
It was that good straight through. Because think about it, the cars, that Stradale, the food, the Italian food. I mean, everything was perfection.
The winner was a Lancia, right? Was that the Stradale you're talking about? What was that? That was a Lancia, very long.
That
pre-war
was the Bertone concept car, right? And that won its class.
No, I'm talking the pre-war car.
The big winner. The big winner was the Ferrari 335, that new restoration by Paul Russell that got rained on right before it won.
The luck of the Irishman.
It was incredible.
Poor
Finnegan. It was an incredible car. It was up against those other five cars. Now, I was talking about the Alfa Romeo Tipo 33 Stradale, that's all over the internet.
That thing is ridiculous. Amazing.
Yeah, that's a Dino on steroids. It's just the greatest looking thing you've ever seen. But Zuckerman, pick any car, pick any of the 50, and you go, well, there's
In
the
your
one.
Instagram story, there was a pre-war streamlined modern car that I believe was a pre-war Lancia that had a guy that looked like he was wearing a toupee with a sour-looking woman.
Those are the swells.
The swells. She did not look happy, but that was a fabulous car, and I laughed at seeing those two.
I'm gonna buy an Alunga and Son watch now. And not because I feel indebted to them, but because I really was sold on their watch philosophy. First of all, they're the Germans. They're the German watchmakers. I love the story of Walter Lang, who at age 66 decides he's not through. Germany has just been unified again. And he says, let's breathe some life into this brand. and he gives birth to this new phase of this company and makes these beautiful watches that are about, you know, I was talking to Wilhelm, the CEO, saying, you know, Ferrari's an emotional brand and Porsche's an engineering brand. What is Lange? And he was like, these are classic watches that are upscale without showing or trying to say I have too much wealth. Ooh. On the front, and on the bottom, you have this movement that's just for you, which you do find when you take this watch off and you stare at it. And it, you know, and I was saying to you guys, this is a watch that made me feel like a gentleman, because I'm not.
You're an imposter.
I'm an imposter, exactly. So it became a very critical part of my suit. When I had a tie on and I put this on, I felt like, all right, at least I won't.
But you continue to make the same mistake over and over and over again, which is they handed you this $20,000 or $30,000 watch, and you fucking gave it back. I don't understand. Why didn't you get on the plane?
Everybody from the company so much, and I would never. Everybody, the whole staff. Was so much fun.
Harrison,
so much fun. You're right.
I can't believe it.
By the way, just a quick mention to you. Hodinkee, the watch blog, is selling a limited edition. Maybe it's not limited, actually. A new Autavia Orange Boy. You missed out on the Siffert. I just read today that they're going to be selling the Orange Boy, which is based on another old Autavia. I have one of the original ones. You should get this watch. I want you, after we're done here, to go on Hodinkee and do the pre-order. It's a beautiful, beautiful watch. And that way you won't feel so bad when you see me and Jerry with our Sifferts.
I want to steal a watch. That's what I want to do. I want to rip a watch off. And then I'll feel – I want to wear it.
I don't know if you're – I haven't really caught – I'm trying to catch up to everything. But I read on the way over here – I had two things that happened to me on the way over. Both have got me a little upset. One, I read that Trump is going to try to stop German import cars from being shipped to the United States. It's like no more Porsches, more Mercedes.
We're in a non-political show. I'll keep about bite my tongue. I don't even know what to say.
What is that story?
It's like kicking your best friend in the nuts, saying I don't like you anymore.
I haven't been paying attention to him really at all, but now I am. I can't have the guy ban Porsches.
You know what it is? It's like me saying to you, you know those cars we own together? They're in my garage, and I've changed the code. Fuck you.
Yeah.
You don't get any. You don't get to drive any.
No. And the most pressing story of the moment, and it has to do with Gordon Ramsay. Do you remember a year ago, Gordon Ramsay's agent, who is my agent, one of my agents at CAA, called and said, Gordon's looking for GT2 RS. And he said, could you help him with that? And I said, I will. I will give you some of my time to find one of these cars if Gordon comes on the podcast and talks cars with us for an hour. Done. Gordon agreed. Hans said it would happen. Cut to right now. There has been we were talking to him last summer, and then the dates didn't work out. He was here, and they said, don't worry, he'll be in touch. Now Dean is texting me on the drive over, hey, Gordon's car is here. His GT2 RS has been delivered, by the way, before yours and mine, by the way. And I don't recall hearing him on the podcast. Was he on the podcast? And I said, no, he wasn't. And I just texted Hans. I said, look, I'm about to go on a rant, a Gordon Ramsay rant, a welching on this deal rant. In fact, he's taking delivery tomorrow of the car. And you know, we could call Dean up right now and say, don't give him the car. But what do I do here? I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's busy. But doesn't it seems like he played a little game.
I think that we have to go to Auto Gallery and in 60-minute style chase him across the parking lot. Mr. Ramsay, you're a welcher. How come you didn't go on the podcast?
That's such a good idea.
Yes.
Well, he's going there tomorrow. Unfortunately, I'm going on Jay Leno's show tomorrow, so I can't do it.
So
however, Will, are you all healed up? Are you ready to run? That Will, our producer.
Running is out for a little while. I'm getting elliptical. Slowly.
I have one important piece of news.
What
for
do you,
you
got? All right. Well, in any case, that needs to be resolved. I don't want to activate everybody against Gordon Ramsay yet. So don't give him a lot of shit on his Instagram or any of his other social media yet. But after this, I'm going to push CAA pretty hard to get some clarity on this situation.
And I want him in here. I want to yell at him.
He's got an incredible collection. He's got two LaFerraris. I mean, he's got something to say. He's got something to say. All right, what do you have to say? And then we have to bring in our guest. We have a guest from Podcast One here, Todd Garner, who has a podcast called The Producer's Guide. He'll be coming in 1 minute. And we're going to talk about movies. We're going to talk about entertainment. But Zuckerman, give me what you got quickly.
Sticky boogers. The sticky boogers, they're called glue dots. You can get them from Office Depot.
Okay, so if you've been listening to this podcast, how many shows ago did we talk about this?
Four or five or ten, but I needed those sticky boogers that you, the little gift cards come in, yes, the magazine, and we couldn't find those, and I really need those for a little rattle in my 1M. And finally, one of my staff people discovered that those sticky boogers are called glue dots.
And what do you need them for in the 1M?
There is a little light lens that rattles, and every so often it vibrates off and falls into my lap. And with a little sticky booger in the corner, it's going to seat in there perfectly.
Yeah, I like that. You're going to start fixing stuff on your own. This is important.
And I'm going to give you, because you're my friend and I'm not Trump and the Germans, I'm going to give you some sticky boogers. I'm not going to boycott you or impose a tariff upon you for sharing sticky boogers.
What is this car you want me to drive after the podcast?
It is an E30 M3, a 1988 M3.
Right.
And as you know, BMW guys drive their cars, unlike, say, Porsche, Ferrari. And this car only has 8,000 miles on it. It's in a brand new 1988 M3.
You think I'm going to like this?
Yes, because you will understand that you have to understand where the rewards are in that car. It is not a car that rewards you all over the range and the band.
Okay.
You have to get the car into the right RPM for it to come on cam, for the power, for the horsepower torque to be on delivery, and to feel the handling of the car.
Wow,
it will not reward you in stop-and-go traffic. It will reward you at 4,000 RPM, spirited driving on Sunset Boulevard, and you will go, holy shit, this is amazing.
Well, that's what I'm going to do. Can I take my kids to school in it? Is there enough room in the back?
Just make sure that the dirty feet are not dirty.
No, they don't. They're not before school. Usually everything's fine. There's just a lot of SPF on their arms and hands. You have a team of guys. And then I want to get back in the GT3.
Absolutely.
You know, there have been so many people, by the way, interested. I want to bring our guests in. We're going to do that in 1 second. And then I'm going to need a tissue. I'm jet lagged and I'm a little allergic. I'm reacquainting myself. But a lot of people keep writing me. And I'm sorry I don't answer everybody. But they want to know how our system works. And I feel like we've explained it pretty simply, right? We don't really get too bogged down in the specifics of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know what I want to really say more about it other than you and I are very good friends and we're not really crazy about keeping track of everything. And you know.
That's it. You're not overly sensitive about it. Use it when you want to. Don't when you don't. Who cares?
Yeah, and I think you have to be someone like us who's owned a lot of stuff over many years to just have the right amount of a cavalier attitude about the whole thing.
The thing that is the most important is that we're equally careful.
Mm-hmm.
And we both really care for the car.
Yes.
So if somebody got in the car with dog shit on their feet and fucked it up or broke something and didn't fix it or didn't notice, that would be a problem.
That would be a
but
problem.
The amount of time you keep it or drive it versus me, I don't care because you always return the car nice or
better.
But
you did make an accusation towards me that was a false accusation.
Well, probably
in the silver car. Remember?
I know.
About my creepy kids and what they left in the car?
Yeah, they did.
That's not our flashlight.
Okay, so whose flashlight?
Okay, I'm just telling you. You said my kids left a flashlight and a bottle of water in there. Okay, first of all, I can tell you it's not me because I don't let my kids bring water into the car.
It a little teeny Nestle bottle of water that a kid would have.
I understand that, and this is the mysterious part of what's going on here. We do have small flashlights. They're little black ones, and this was this titanium silver one, which now is in the possession of James, my 8-year-old, but it wasn't ours. It's a complete mystery to me how that got in
there. So some other child's water and flashlight got in the car.
I have a theory. Are you ready? Here it comes. The radio install guy did it.
You're right.
Right?
You are so right.
That is my theory. He was laying down back there and doing stuff, and I bet you that was his. He had his little wires, and I bet you that's his flashlight. What was his name?
He had a funny name.
I can't remember.
Ingle.
Yeah, and forgive me, but he. I've been hearing from a lot of friends of mine that he's telling people he does all my cars. Well, he did. He did one, and it is fantastic. And I'll remember his name.
I guess Ramo.
A little later. Yeah, but he. Isn't it great that we did that? I think that was his water. I think that was his flashlight. And you know what? He can leave it there.
He
did a great
there.
Job on the stereo system. And there's not a drive that goes by where I don't go, my God.
I can't believe you're still thinking, burning with the accusation, the false accusation I made.
Not really burning. I don't give a shit. Anyway, all right. Let's bring in Todd Garner. Finding a dress shirt that fits is nearly impossible. Something is always off, you know, and I know this problem intimately. None of my shirts fit right. Be it the collar, the sleeves, you pull your arms up, it gets frumpy on one side, it never looks right, it's too tight, it's too loose, it's madness! And I see this, I'm on TV occasionally and I see my shirts don't fit right. Well, guess what? Thankfully, ordering a custom fit shirt has never been easier with Proper Cloth. At ProperCloth.com, you can easily create a custom shirt size in seconds by answering 10 simple questions. I did this, ladies and gentlemen. I knew the answer to 7 of the 10 questions, and they asked me some pointed questions back very quickly. They sent me 2 shirts. They were perfectly sized, and I only knew 7 of the 10 questions. I'm so impressed with Proper Cloth. At Proper Cloth, you can choose from over 20 collar styles, 10 cuff styles, and 500 fabric styles. From classic to business to casual to completely customize your shirt and get the style that you want. The team at Proper Cloth works with the best fabric producers from around the world and only buys fabrics that meet their high quality expectations. No more cheap bargain store shirts you can wear only once or twice. Each one of their shirts goes through an extensive quality control testing, so you're getting the absolute best quality and craftsmanship. I showed it to Erica, my wife. She went, "Oh, I love that shirt." And I told her it was Proper Cloth. Proper Cloth guarantees a perfect fit, meaning that if somehow your dress shirt doesn't fit perfectly, they will remake it for free. The whole process is risk-free. This is the future of shirts, my friends. These shirts are made completely custom for you, starting at only $80. So guys, stop wearing shirts that don't fit. Start looking your best with a custom-fitted shirt. Go to propercloth.com/spike today. Enter gift code SPIKE. That's right, I'm the gift code. To save $20 on your first shirt, that's propercloth.com/spike and enter gift code SPIKE to save $20 on your first shirt.
You're listening to Spike's Car Radio.
Well, here he is, Todd Garner. His new show is The Producer's Guide. You're going to hear, you've only been doing this for a little while, right?
Yeah, no, just total neophyte at this.
And you were in the studio right before us. Who was that? That was one of the Wayans brothers, Marlon Wayans. Yeah. You've also had Adam Sandler, Rebel Wilson, Rob Riggle.
Wow.
These are big names.
Exhausting.
I'm exhausted by the whole process of just booking these acts.
Well, congratulations on the show. You were just saying that, have we met when you were at Disney, that I was on all of these lists to do what?
To
write movies?
Yeah.
Well, what happened?
You know what? It's not just also writing movies. It's anybody who can write jokes, who knows how to be funny. We're always looking for that.
Well, but why didn't you ever call?
Probably because you were probably really busy.
Yeah.
And you were making a shit ton of money on television.
So this would be in the 90s.
You didn't need to take a downturn to movies.
Yeah, Zuckerman, see that? No, I did. I did for a short time think about it. But back then I was such an insecure writer that I remember Steven Spielberg called up and said, "Would you come in after Seinfeld? Would you come in and pitch me some movies?" And, you know, that ruined my month.
Oh, no, that's insane.
That ruined my month. And I went in there, and his one of my good friends was his assistant, and she said, you know, when he starts going, like that, that means shut up. He gets it.
Oh, God.
So she gave me these little cues on how to do stuff. And he was interested in doing 2 ideas, but I just didn't have the chemistry to follow through on it the right way. I was a very insecure guy who didn't really have a lot of writing experience, even though I had written on this great big show called Seinfeld. Right. It was my first job in scripted.
Oh,
so, you know, I'd go home
that's like, yeah, you know what? I started for the Patriots. It was like, it came out of the game.
We're back to imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
I don't belong here.
Well,
none of us feel like we belong here. Are you kidding me? Every day I walk out of the house, I'm like, this is it. This is the day.
Oh, yes, they figure it out. You got the monkey mind, too.
Sure, of course. Yeah. Oh, we all do. Yeah.
So where did you start at Disney? Where did you start your career off?
Well, my career, I started as an editor. So I was an
an editor for 4 years independently, did a bunch of editing, music videos and things like that. Then I thought, that's no way to become a producer. So I thought the way to become a – I always wanted to do this. And I thought the way to become a producer is to have some banking experience. So I have a degree in economics. So I went to work for Wells Fargo Bank thinking I would go to business school and come out of business school and be a producer. And then that never happened. What happened was I happened to my dad happened to be talking to somebody, and I got a job at Paramount Pictures in finance in television. And then I was on the lot, and then I became an assistant. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Disney, and I was at Disney for 10 years. I started off as a creative executive and ended up being the president with Nina Jacobson in that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Accidental success. We love it. Sure. This is what we like. So
I tell the story that every job I took from being an editor – It was like comical, because every job I took was like a massive pay cut until I became an assistant, and I was making it at the time working at Sony Pictures as an assistant, making $400 gross a week. Wow. And I was like,
even then it was dog shit.
I was like, oh God. And I was like, well, that's it. I mean, that's pretty much the bottom. Right. So my dad was flipping out because he didn't understand this business at all. I have nobody in my family that was in the business. So everybody thought, this is – what did we get a college degree for, so that every job you can take, you can make less money?
So what are the movies that you're – like, are you a creative producer or are you – you're just all of it?
I don't know.
What are the things you're most proud of at that time that you were working on?
It's hard to say. It's like, which of your kids are the best looking. I love all the movies I've worked on, for better or for worse. But, I mean, just in terms of the sheer fun – and ones that I just love. I loved working on Con Air. I love working on The Waterboy, because my friendship with Adam Sandler began there. So each one has its own. I loved working on Pearl Harbor. It was a movie that I wanted to make for a long time.
You've made every movie you've just mentioned is my two boys, their favorite movies. I'm looking at Paul Blart.
I'm big with Teen Boys.
Con Air must have been insane.
Con Air was so much fun.
Really?
Oh my God! The Empire magazine just did a 25-year retrospective,
is?
Yeah, and I know
is that I'm, is it what that
maybe it was 20? I know it's either 20 or 25.
Will there be a retrospective of Paul Blart?
Oh my God, probably not. But there was so many fun stories. The making of that movie, because it was Bruckheimer's first movie solo, because Don had died when they were editing The Rock, and so it was his movie first movie solo. We were in Utah with all those crazy actors.
And also, was Nicolas Cage and John Travolta, is that who was in Con Air?
No, it was Nicolas Cage and a lot of people, but it was John Malkovich played the bad guy.
Oh, God.
John Cusack was in it.
And Steve then you
Buscemi,
had a lunch, a lot of...
and there was so many good actors in the movie. And it was just so much fun, because we were making a comedy. And Jerry, you know, Jerry has humor in his movie, but this movie was... J.J. Abrams wrote on it. I mean, it was a comedy.
Wow.
You know, put the bunny back in the box, et cetera. And so it was just amazing to be out there. We were in Wendover, Nevada, in the Bonneville Salt Flats, which is where that whole incursion took. And it was just a bunch of young people just out there. It was so much fun.
Isn't that amazing?
But, you know, and Blart is a movie, because that was my first movie with Kevin James. Then I made a lot of movies with Kevin. So there's been I loved 13 Going on 30. I still get that all the time from a lot of different people. And then I made a bunch of movies for my kids. I made Daddy Daycare and...
There's another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
So it's been fun.
Blart is, you know, we all made fun of Blart when it came out.
Of course.
And then when you watch it with your kids, you go, this is a masterpiece.
Your
kids are laughing their asses off. That brings joy to your life.
Of course.
And now you're like, well... You guys are geniuses.
Well, I talk about that.
I'm not joking.
Blart, genius.
I talk a lot about this on my...
And how many were there? There were two Blarts?
Two.
Or...
Well, I talk about this a lot on my podcast, which is, you know, I'm very much maligned a lot of times for the movies that I make and critically. And I used Blart and Daddy Daycare specifically as an example of movies that are made, and when you are throwing it out into the zeitgeist of, like, you know, like... Dunkirk,
right?
And the critics are looking at these two movies. They're like, "You're an asshole. You know, you make shitty movies. What the hell are you doing?" And so, but I say this: when you're in a theater with 450 kids and they're just laughing their asses off, there's nothing better.
You hit a home run.
Yeah, it's so much fun. And I got to say, my daughter who's 10 and my son is 17. So my son, I made a lot of these movies for my son, because when he was 4 years old, I made Daddy Daycare. When he was, you know, in early adolescence, I made Blart. And so I would watch him react to those. And it really made me happy. And what's funny is, a couple days ago, my daughter, I was walking her to the bus, and as we almost got to the bus, she said, "Daddy, you got to meet the bus driver. He's a loves all your movies." And I'm like, I'm now a hero to my daughter with the bus driver. So like,
yeah,
my career is
those
made.
Are great. Yeah. Those are great
this,
moments.
This reminds me of a story that Lucas Forster told me about Frank Yablons and Ira. And Frank had the consummate career in Hollywood and ended up where he ended up. But Ira had the schlock career and ended up with the yachts, the boats, the planes, and everybody loving him.
Exactly.
Right? But Frank was a serious filmmaker, yeah. And no one came to the funeral.
Well,
I'm not quoting Lucas Wright, but yeah.
Gist of it. I got to say, the reason I do this for a living is I just want to entertain people. I'm sure writing for Seinfeld, there's nothing better than just hearing that feedback of just making somebody's day, you know, just giving somebody who's having a shitty day come home and be able to laugh is great.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't feel that way.
You definitely made a lot of people laugh, my friend.
Yeah, no, yeah, not me, Larry and Jerry, but you know, I'd be walking sometimes in New York and hear people talking about my episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And quoting them, and that always freaked me out. I'd back up a little bit and move away from them because I thought there's something wrong with them that they're talking about
TV. But didn't you also write for Dana and Dennis Miller and Michael Richards? I mean, you've written for some beasts.
For me, it's the when we shoot it and when I write it, I really like those moments, I think, more than anything else. And then what happens after that?
Well, I did a little research on you. Didn't Dennis Miller say that you really got your start on SNL because you were feeding him lines and he was using them?
Yeah, yeah.
I got to say, to me, there's no more intelligent comedian than Dennis Miller.
No,
so
that
the fact
was
that
great.
You were sneaking shit in there is just beyond.
Then it was actually seeing the joke on TV for me, just
that's
watching
amazing.
It and going, oh, I wrote that. But that wore off pretty quickly.
Then it was in the deep insecurity.
Then it was about just reading newspapers and writing down what I was thinking and having a place for it and having it resonate and ripple in there.
How does it get out now? How does the creative thing get out now?
Right, here we are.
Oh, perfect.
We're doing it right now.
Right on.
We're doing it right now. But I don't write. We don't really get into the comedy scene too much. I'd like to get back and do something that's a little more topical. I've always been a monologue writer and a Weekend Update writer, and then I've done it myself. So
you did stand up?
I did. I'm mostly a television comedian. How about that? I hosted a late night show, and that's where
I like
a prompter. I don't have to worry about I have trouble memorizing stuff, and I don't feel like going out of the house at 10 o'clock at night to go do comedy every night till I get it memorized. I don't want to do that. I would rather read the newspaper and then write the jokes and say the jokes.
You're perfect for late night then.
Hey, here we go. All they need. Whoever's looking for a 53-year-old guy to run their late night crew will do that. When you go, let's get back to like making movies. You say you're making movies for your kids. What's the process? Like, you know, daddy daycare.
Right.
How do you take us through that? How does that work? You want to make a movie for your son, right?
Well, I had a
and does the script just land in your lap, or are you going, hey, let's do a daycare story? And
no, what on that one specifically? What happened is John Davis brought Joe Roth and I the script. I was the president of that studio at the time called Revolution Studios, and he brought me the script with Eddie attached.
Okay,
and the director attached, and then Fox was where John Davis had his deal. They didn't want to make it. And admittedly, the script needed some work, but we were a brand new company. We needed to make movies to survive. And so we said, there's definitely an audience for this. Because I had come from Disney. So, you know, all those movies like Pacifier and Game Plan and Snow Dogs, all those movies. Anytime you put an adult a father figure, 3 Minute Baby, for example, and you have kids undo them, it always works because kids love to see grown men acting stupid because they all think as fathers were morons. And so when that script came, the idea of it really resonated with me. My son was in daycare, and and I'm a bit of a goofball anyway. So it wasn't that hard of a leap for us. Then you just got to roll up your sleeves and do the work. So everybody dug in. We brought in new writers, and we just dug in that script. And then Eddie, at that point, said, I don't really want to carry this by myself. So then we added Steve Zahn's character and Jeffrey Garland's characters. And Jeff, nobody knew who he was. I think he had just done a couple episodes of Curb. And Steve Zahn was just like the perfect physical comedian. So we gave Steve a lot of the stuff, like being stung by bees and all that stuff. And Eddie was so happy. Eddie's like, go on out there, Steve. Come on, Steve, go on out there. And I say one really funny moment is when Eddie walks the little boy into the door. At that moment, you're just watching that going, That's going to be in every trailer, and it became the $100 million joke. It just became the joke that was in every trailer, and then the movie went on. It was incredibly successful for us.
All right, I have so many questions. We've got to take a break. The show is called The Producer's Guide with Todd Garner. We'll be right back. Fellas, important question for you. Do you feel like you've got a little less hair than you used to? Be honest with yourself. Look at Zuckerman. The more of you that run from the truth, the faster the truth will catch up to you. So here's the thing. There are two clinically proven medications that let you keep your hair, and now they're inexpensive and easy to get. Long story short, but the important thing is that you don't need to lose your hair if you don't want to. That's why we need to talk about Keeps. For a few minutes now and just a dollar a day, you'll never have to worry about your hair loss again. Our producer, Will, went through the sign-up process, and he tells me, I'm looking at him right now, he said, quick and easy. He's got a beautiful head of hair. Not sure why he signed up for it, but I'm sure it's going to be even more beautiful now.
Preventative measures.
Oh, preventative measures. Just enter some personal details and your address so they know where to send the product. Answer only a handful of simple, straightforward questions and submit 3 photos of your head to the doctor to look at, and you're done. It was easy, right?
Very easy.
It took him less than 5 minutes, and now he's on his way to glorious hair like Clark Kent. Unlike Zuckerman, who has accepted his keratin calamity and looks like Lex Luthor. If you could reverse your hair loss and all it costs you was 5 minutes and a buck a day, why aren't you already on it? Keeps is only $10 to $35 a month, plus now you can get your first month free. One hell of a deal for getting to keep your hair. There's no reason to put this off any longer. Stop hair loss today the easy way with Keeps. To receive your first month of treatment for free, go to keeps.com/spike. That's my name. That's keeps.com/spike. That's a free month of treatment at keeps.com/spike. Keeps, hair today, hair tomorrow. If you want to help my podcast stay free to download with minimal ads, then take the Podcast One listener survey. I know, surveys, I get it, but it really would help me out. Responses will help align the appropriate advertisers to my audience. The survey is short and completely anonymous, and it takes no more than 5 minutes. There are 2 easy ways to take the survey. Go to podcastone.com/mysurvey or podcastone.com and click the survey banner. If you filled out the survey banner in the past, we thank you, but we need a new one. That's how many shows we've made. We need another survey. You do me, Spike's Car Radio, and the Podcast One a huge favor by filling it out. Thank you for supporting my program and for taking the time to complete the survey and vote Zuckerman off the island. You know, everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is, you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket, it just may be the most rewarding to-do you do today.
You're listening to Spike's Car Radio.
All right, we're back with Todd Garner, the producer's guide, the real Zuckerman. We're talking about movies. We talked about cars in the beginning, so give me a break. I want to indulge my entertainment bones here. Let's is the movie business viable these days? Because let me ask you. I find I'm watching Netflix now, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll watch one of their new series, and then a movie will come up on there, and I go, I don't want to watch a movie. It's only an hour and 38 minutes.
I need 9 hours if I'm going to invest my time.
10 hours of entertainment. Right. And this realization was just last week, and then I started thinking: Are these series going to hurt the movie business?
Well, it's a more complicated answer than just is it viable anymore. Yes, I believe it's viable. I believe that the 2-hour movie going experience is, you know, it's been proven psychologically. It's the perfect amount of time to get lost in a story. You know, and so I love binging too.
What is the perfect time?
And they've said somewhere between 90 and 120 minutes is the which is why movies are that long.
Then why would, you know, and I'm not going to mention this director, why are his comedies 2 hours and 20 minutes and 2 hours and 40? Because I do feel a little upset when I see that running time.
At some point, if you're enjoying yourself, it can go longer.
No, it can't. Not
ego. Somebody's ego, right?
And I love them, and I love the films, but I just want them to edit. That's all.
Well, I mean, those kind of comedies also, I think I know who you're talking about. Those kind of comedies also are so verbose. I mean, there's so much going on in terms of the talking and the improvising that he wants to give everybody their due. But I will say it's complicated because obviously the distribution model has changed a lot. And in terms of like the theatrical going experience, there's a lot of competition because you have these giant movies coming out every week that people want to see and have that experience. But I do believe with Netflix and all the other streamers and now Hulu and the way Disney is organizing their streaming service, and I think that everybody will start to follow suit. I think that movies will never go away, but I just believe that people will enjoy them in a different way than having to go to the theater and then waiting 6 weeks before you could see it.
So is the theater dead? Do you think the theater experience is going to die?
I think it's the opposite. Now, I think it's actually the opposite. I think that once we get to a place where distribution has figured itself out, whether that be zero windows, so everything's day and date, and I've said this before, and is that I believe it's like sports. So, you know, I'm from L.A., and so in the Coliseum – here in LA, which still's here, it's cement seats, and you had hot dogs, and you had Coke. That was it, and your beer. And if you didn't like it, don't come. Mm-hmm. And now with the NFL, because the NFL has really figured out distribution better than anybody in terms of all the ways you can enjoy a game and all the different things surrounding it, the business has exploded so much. You have these amazing, amazing stadium experiences. And I think that theaters are starting to follow suit. You can go and you have reclining seats and you have drinks and you can have dinner. So I don't think that's ever going to go away. I think it's just going to shrink down to its natural,
That's funny, but that they had that experience was at the beginning in the 20s, right?
Well, and then they went, because it got so easy, they went, well, screw it. Then you're going to be in New York and you're going to have plastic seats and probably it'll be sticky. And you maybe get a Coke, and so what? You're going to come, so we're not going to try. And as people have competed with television and gaming and all this other stuff, they've had to step up their games, and they're doing fine. And I think it's hard, and nobody likes change, no business likes change, and they're going to have to adjust quickly, which nobody likes to do. And so I just think once that kind of settles out, and Netflix, is already bigger than Disney now. So home video clearly is not going away. I think it'll just shift. And for a creative person like myself, I've made three movies at Netflix. So I love it. You know, and I think it's – in fact, we're talking about Marlon Wayans. I made it – my last one was with Marlon. And so I love working for them. I think it's great. And so I'm excited to try all kinds of different things.
Is it a faster turnaround when you're making a movie for Netflix? I mean, you know what I mean? With the movie business, it seems you're flying all over the place and testing your movie and waiting and editing.
The actual physical development and making of the movie and editing of the movie is not shorter, because it just takes that much time to do it.
Right.
But definitely the window of once you're done editing to the thing comes out, they promote the hell out of their stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's not the same. Because you're not so dependent on that opening weekend.
Right.
So you're not like grinding up to that opening, because they it's apples to apples with them. They can get the word out on their site, and you can watch it. Like, you'll see a trailer for something that's coming up a week before, and you're like, click.
Let me ask you a question. Somebody offered me a copy of Deadpool 2. They said, you want to watch this? How are these people getting these copies of movie? By the way, didn't take it. I said, I don't want to get arrested.
Well, I mean, it's also – I mean, that's such it's really a small –
But where is it – are the edit rooms getting hacked? Is that where they're getting copies of these films?
There's a million different ways. So, yes, there are editors that – there's, all through the process, whether it's the color timers or whatever, there are people at places that – will give up digital copies for piracy.
Is that how the cut is getting from edit room, from place to place,
sometimes,
from color correction?
Is it
on the internet?
Sometimes they're just bringing a phone to the theater. We caught, in anger management, we caught a guy at our preview.
Right.
It was a pretty famous case. We caught a guy at our preview videoing the preview.
That was
of
a
anger
Seinfeld
management.
Episode,
yeah, that
right?
was one that I wrote.
Yeah,
right.
I wrote
yeah,
that.
I know.
And we busted the guy right in the theater. It was it was wild. It means
not
normal where you
do.
Have like police come in and take a guy out. But he went to jail. I mean, so.
He did, right.
Yeah. And then what it exposed was a huge problem. But now, when we do previews, we have cameras. And look, at the end of the day, piracy.
So it really is piracy from a camcorder
sometimes.
That's still going on.
Piracy goes on, but at the end of the day, That's why I also think shrinking the windows is such a good idea. Just give it to everybody when they want it. Let them pay what you,
right.
you know. It's like Amazon.
Right.
Let them pay what they're going to pay.
Right.
And get it out there.
Yeah.
And the theater people still go to the theaters, you know, for dates and going out and having that communal experience, whether it's a comedy or a horror movie or one of these big Marvel movies. You want to go out and you want to enjoy it in the theater.
And
then, but if you don't, then you should be able to.
But it seems like it's always one of the blockbusters. These movies that are routinely now making $1 billion worldwide.
Yeah. Well,
right?
Yeah, but then every once in a while, you know, a Get Out will sneak in or a
right.
Quiet Place will sneak in.
Boy,
or
Get
Split
Out.
Will sneak in or all of a sudden a Hangover will pop.
Right.
It does. It is the have and the have-nots right now. If you have so much competition for your entertainment dollar that you better have the goods. If you don't, then you're going to be in real trouble.
So what is working in film right now? Is it the big blockbusters?
Yeah.
Are the comedy working? Are these smaller films working? I mean, where is the money right now? In
the money is in Marvel. And
right.
You know, because what
– Now, I had read – before you continue there, I had read that Sony – Or someone told me this. Maybe it's not true. Sony had a chance to buy Marvel's complete library.
Everybody did.
For $25
million.
$30 million. And they said, you know what? We want Spider-Man. That's it.
No Everybody.
Black Panther, please.
Lots
no.
of people can hang themselves over these decisions.
Oh, yeah. Well, Ben Fritz, who wrote the book
right.
that you're talking about, which mm-hmm. is called The Big Picture, he was on my podcast. He was a reporter for The Wall Street Journal. He goes through exactly what you're talking about, which is the rise of Marvel and the depletion of the quote unquote movie star system. And so, Marvel, the reason why those movies are doing so well, first of all, they're incredibly well made, and so you have to give it to them on that, because if they weren't, people wouldn't come.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also building on each other, and they're different enough in terms of the tone and the filmmaker that. It's exciting for people to come because they have a vested interest and a feeling that they understand the backstory of the characters. They feel they know them. It's almost like a TV show in that
yeah.
way. And so, somebody did say it's the longest running TV series that, you know, in history because it's got so many hours already.
Mm-hmm.
But each one builds on the next one, and then Black Panther will be in, you know, Avengers, and you know, and Iron Man will be in Spider-Man. So it's like. They're building on each other, which you don't have generally in other movies.
No.
Other movies are one-offs. You come for 2 hours and then you're out. So that's great. Star Wars is that universe is attempting to do that, and of course DC is attempting to do that. So those are very popular because you're part of the communal experience. You're having a kind of worldwide conversation about this, you know, this thing in the zeitgeist.
Is there a person that gave birth to this? Is there one genius?
Kevin Feige.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a genius. I mean, the guy
who you know, I've never heard this name before.
He's
who
the,
is this?
He's the CEO of Marvel, and he's the guy who has really been he was an intern there, and he was a reader there, and he's so deeply knowledgeable about this comic book universe in such a visceral way.
Wow, he's the bag boy who took over the supermarket business.
Yeah, I mean, and he deserves all the credit cuz he has completely guided this thing from the beginnings, and even so much of saying we got to get Spider-Man back and we, you know, let's
mm-hmm.
not sell, let's do it ourselves. All
I want to do, I'm going to pitch him. I'm going to find him. I'm going to pitch him this idea.
Sure.
Because all of these movies, they seem like they have to save the world in every single movie. Every week the world. I want to do a family who's living in that city where the world is saved every week.
Well,
it falls apart and they're just trying to go to work. Mom's a nurse. Dad's a salesman.
That's the Simpsons all over again.
But I will say,
and, oh, this again.
Well, that's what's
the world. We got to. Aliens this time? All right, well, just wait a minute. It'll be saved. Okay, everything's fine.
But I will say they do that. I mean, they do have consequences. Like there are movies in the series where they're getting sued because a building fell on
right.
a family.
Right.
The whole Jessica Jones thing. She's
That's right.
living in that city that got destroyed. And
well,
hates
now
the
Netflix
Avengers.
Is doing a bunch of those too.
Yeah.
Right?
So they're very conscious of that.
You know, and now we have comedy. We have Deadpool. We
uh-huh.
have Guardians of the
mm-hmm.
Galaxy, which are really fun. Deadpool is probably one of my favorite
Me
superhero
too.
Movies ever. Just the
Have
writing is so sharp.
One?
It's so funny. What I loved about the first one, though, I'll tell you, is when I watched it, I don't even ask my wife. I don't even invite her in to watch movies like this because I assume she's not. I'm watching Deadpool again at home, and she walks by, and she stands behind me on the couch. She goes, what is this? And she's laughing at lines I never thought she would laugh
That's
at.
So great.
And I said, this is Deadpool, and I can't believe that you're
–
and she sat down and watched the rest of the movie with me, and I was stunned.
It's two of my favorite comedies. Deadpool 1 and Deadpool 2 – Deadpool 2 are two of my favorite comedies. They're amazing. They're so funny and so well-written and so smart. And he's great, and I'm always a fan when somebody completely finds their voice.
Yeah, yeah.
And their voice
no
matches
kidding.
Perfectly. It's so good.
I'm going to get that bootleg then and watch this. You just talked me into it.
And when does this idea sunset? Like McDonald's sunsets, right? Like, right. There's, what's the next idea? When does this get stale?
Well, I thought we were talking about Star Wars lag this past weekend with the Han Solo movie.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that there's been a little too much.
I don't believe that's the case necessarily. I don't think too much is the problem. It's when things, and I'm not suggesting, I haven't seen Solo, so I can't comment on it, but I think things go away when things feel stale and things feel that, you know, repetitive. And so far, Marvel has not done that. So
right.
they have missed, but they've been able to, you know, Deadpool's a comedy. It's an R-rated comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Black Panther is a, you know, a kind of complete world that you've never seen before and completely diverse and turns the thing on its head. And Avengers, the last one, put everyone in the Marvel Universe together. You've never seen that. So if you can keep – and I believe he can because I believe this guy really is like – he already knows. And there's such a deep bench for these comics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's – you know, literally 100 years or 70 years of these comics that they can – they minutely go in, and there's interesting stories and interesting ways to go, and I think that they can keep it going.
Who haven't they done that they should do?
I don't know. I mean, I don't have
There's so many European comics, too. There's a whole
–
The Blancs.
Or Dylan Dog. Dylan Dog was a comic I read in the 90s.
Dylan – I think Deputy Dog you're talking
about.
No,
there was Dylan Dog, which was a very violent
Tennessee
European.
Tuxedo, is that
– Well, this is – And what is Tennessee Tuxedo?
It's a cartoon.
No, but what is he?
He's a penguin. Yeah. Who is Dylan Dog?
These were European comics that were very dark ahead of their time. Lots of violence, lots of murder and slashing. There's all sorts of universes of comics that nobody's seen.
And who has those?
Well,
why don't we?
That's your business. I'm just a personal injury lawyer. I'm just an ambulance chaser.
I will say that the difference between Star Wars and Marvel is Star Wars. The problem Star Wars has is they always have lightsabers. They always have kind of. It always has like the same kind of characters. That the universe feels very.
It's a closed system.
Whereas Marvel has been able to do a comedy and an action movie and a darker action movie and a science fiction movie with
IBM versus Apple.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so they've been able to do all these different things, and the universe can expand in all these different ways. Whereas Star Wars always is going to kind of feel like the first one. It has this tone. And these limitations because of the technology around it that it's going to be tougher for them, I think.
Wow.
So if your son was going to go into Hollywood, what would you tell him to work on? Where would he go?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, there's so much opportunity right now. So if my son – it depends on what he wanted to do. I write. I think you have to do what Spike
You think
did.
Writing?
You got to write.
That's a hard life.
But writing will lead you to everything else.
I think editing leads you to everything
else. Wow, if the grass
Those guys
is greener,
can tell
I'm
stories.
Looking at the grass.
Well, writers, editors are able to put story together.
But
the
editors need somebody.
I'm looking at a writer and an editor pointing at
writers
each other.
Writers don't need anything but themselves and a computer.
That's what's horrifying about it.
Yes.
I absolutely
Not
hate
easy.
It.
But that's the greatest line ever.
I loved writing in a little group of people, like with Jerry and the Seinfeld writers. That is wonderful when you're sitting there with a bunch of funny guys, you're having a nice time, and women, and you're writing something that you can respect.
If I was a writer, I would have to write with a partner. I couldn't
write. Right.
In a
room no, you have to. Right.
I would. There's no way I could do it.
These days, when I'm by myself, it's awful. It's just awful.
But
that's why we look for cars, Zuckerman. That's where Car Matchmaker came from. The whole show came from that moment of, I don't want to do my writing today. I'm going to get on eBay Motors and look for cars.
I always laugh. You know, I take Lapeer as a little cut through when I go from like Beverly down to Wilshire. Mm-hmm. And I always laugh. There's always like, you know, a 30-some-odd-year-old guy, paunchy, outside smoking at 2 in the afternoon. And I always say, look at that writer over there. Look at the writer.
When you link cigarette smoking to your writing, you were in big trouble.
Right?
You're in big trouble. Yeah. I need an idea. I got to do – let me light a cigarette.
But this was the highlight of my day to see this, to see the editor say be a writer and the writer say be an editor.
Editing is pretty scary. Yeah, I don't think I'd want to be an editor either. That's a lot of dark rooms and sitting with something and over again. But the worst part of it for me would be the person over my shoulder barking stupid things at me having to keep my shit together.
It was a great learning experience just in terms of how things go together in terms of filmic mm-hmm. language. But – I believe.
But what about the moron behind you giving you a dumb note?
I've been the moron behind the person. But
you know what I mean? Like, my favorite editors are not only good at what they do, but they can keep their composure.
Well, they're all calm.
They come. I know I've had some angry guys who would scream at you and I have to fire them and get rid of them. But I was like, part of your job is to let me.
That's why they're all calm. It's a self-selecting process. Right. Those guys get fired, the calm
ones. If you can stay calm and listen to what I'm saying and we can talk, then it's cool. But I expect them not to freak out.
Because you're the writer. So I go back to writing.
I just mean it's – you've got to be – depending on what it is, a TV show or a movie, you got to listen to the folks behind you. But at the same time, I've sympathized with them when there's some moronic network executive saying something dumb.
Hysterical.
And then I'm like, go ahead and let her have it.
Okay,
let her
happen. Let's say he does not have that creative impulse. So he can't write.
Right.
Let's say he can't write, but he still wants to do Hollywood.
Then I would suggest I would suggest going to work at an agency probably, because then you get to see every part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You get to see actors and writers and directors and talent, and you can kind of, from that vantage point, really launch and figure out what you want to do. But in terms of like being a creative person, I think you have to learn structure and story, and you mm-hmm. have to learn how to tell a story,
mm-hmm.
however you do that. You
and
know?
It's so, and you had, and you didn't have that background.
I didn't, but what I did do is I took a story class, and when I was an assistant, I really read everything I could possibly read and watched every movie I could get my hands on and learned that way. And I giving notes, as you said, and working with the writers, I developed that skill over a long period of time. But I could never write because I just couldn't be by myself. I couldn't just sit in the room. Nothing would get done. I would just be like this is
nothing so does get done.
I'm more of a pack creature, so I like being in rooms where I could spitball ideas and give ideas that
it's,
other people can
it's
implement.
It's so important because that feedback of the room is what gives you the framework to create this thing. And without it, you're kind of in I find I'm in a vacuum.
So here's the funny thing I'm observing because I'm an outsider to this whole creative Hollywood thing. Both of you guys got in as outsiders then, and accidentally.
Sure.
You both bring an outsider's mm-hmm. eye to writing or to producing. Is that then the secret you get
into?
Well,
we're both fans. We watched a lot of this stuff and thought, well, I can do that.
What movies influenced you the most?
Oh, my God.
I know.
That's a really long list.
It starts
with my
five.
Dad's favorite movies, like The Godfather and Goodfellas, and then all the comedies,
the
Caddyshacks, and all the Mel Brooks and
Arthur.
You know, I had a father who did a lot of stuff that was wrong, but the one right thing he did is he would wake me up and go, "There's a show called Saturday Night Live. You should watch this." Yeah. And I'd be six, going, "What is this?"
Yeah.
And laughing, and you've got to watch this. You got to watch this Duck Soup. You got to watch the Marx Brothers, and you got to watch Laurel and Hardy, and every Ernie Kovacs.
Yes.
You know, watch this. This is a sketch called the Seven Steps of a Woman Zelming Her PV, and I'd go, "What?" And it's just this abstract, insane sketch. But that was my. He was a frustrated comedian. He was a salesman who never did anything in entertainment.
He wanted to do sketch because it's all sketch.
But he didn't know any. I mean, none of us did. We grew up in Massachusetts. We didn't know anybody in entertainment. We were just fans of this stuff. But I look back now and go, that was my education, was hooking into all of this stuff very early on. And.
Yeah.
And, you know, George Carlin albums and Steve Martin albums and going, you know, Richard Pryor. And here's what's great about him. And, you know, I had no idea that's where my education was beginning.
I loved all that stuff, but it never occurred to me that I could do that.
Really?
Yeah. Now, I always thought that was like some other breed of people.
Well, that's where Saturday Night Live, bringing this back to Dennis Miller, comes in, because I saw someone handing him jokes going, this is all they're doing.
But you
wrote a couple lines down. I'm going to do that, and that's the moment.
But really the truth is that you're bartending in Boston, mm-hmm. and you're thinking, you're scheming how to get this job. Right.
Right.
And it was accidental.
But
right.
it wasn't a writing job.
It
I
wasn't.
Didn't know there were
no,
writers.
It was,
I just want to be close to David Letterman's show. It's the only thing I'm watching on television.
And you got somebody who got you a job answering phones there.
Yeah.
Right. Hostess.
Well, you have to.
Who in Boston?
Right. You got to constantly ask, too.
Right.
You have to put it out. You have to put it out there. Like, my dad worked at the Southern California Gas Company and plays golf at Lakeside Golf Club here in Toluca Lake. And he... One guy goes, "Oh, yeah, I work for, Paramount." Well, first of all, he got me an internship because a guy worked at Pacific Bell. And he goes, we make these corporate videos. And my dad goes, "Good, my son makes videos." Like, my dad was so frightened that I was going to be homeless that he would listen and somebody would go, "I'm anything in the business." He'd be like, "You should hire my son." And it just worked out.
Great.
But because someone had to put it out there, because – if he wouldn't have said anything or you wouldn't have asked the hostess or whatever, you never would have had the serendipity.
Oh, those little moments.
Yeah. Always.
Those little tiny, tiny moments that have
make
such big ramifications.
Difference.
It's so insane. It's scary when you think about them, isn't
yeah.
it? Well, tell us just before we go about the podcast, the producer's guide. What are we going to hear on the producer's guide?
Well, it's a lot of this. So I started this thing because I wanted to give people hope. There's so much negativity. Honestly, there's so much negativity in the press, especially now with all the stuff that's going on in Hollywood. And there is so much negativity about the business of the movie making. And I don't want people to get – like you said, you didn't think you could do it. I don't want people to feel like that. I want people to feel like they can do it. It's doable. And so if somebody's at home watching a movie and they're inspired, if they watch Deadpool 2, wherever it is, and they watch it and go, man, I'd love to do that. I just want to give people an inside look on, you can do it. Here's how all these people did it. Rebel Wilson was living in Australia, couldn't be further from Hollywood, and nobody would cast her, and she wrote herself a show and rented a theater. And did it herself. I mean, that comes up time and time and time again of people just saying, I just did it. I just did it myself because nobody would give me a chance.
Right.
And so, or I was talking to a hostess and she happened to know a guy who knew a guy. Or my dad, you know, happened to talk to one person. And then you're off to the races. And I just want people to feel inspired and not listen to the rhetoric of the press, which is the movie business is over. There's only making Marvel movies. Don't even try.
So are you talking about origin stories like with Marlon Wayans today?
Absolutely. Everybody.
It's how it happened, how it started.
It's very deep dive into just producing. I'm not trying to get, you know, scandalous things out of people or gossip. I just want to know, how did you do it? How did you go from being a, you know, girl in Australia to now being not only a huge actress, but you're producing your own
TV
show?
Right.
Or Marlon. How do you know? Obviously, he was Keenan's brother,
right?
But he said, you know, at the end of it, he says, you know, that wasn't the best thing for
me
because I had a huge spotlight on me. Or, you know, Neil Moritz, how did he get started? Or Mike DeLuca, another big producer. So I'm just trying to take, or Ben Fritz, all we do with Ben Fritz and the Wall Street Journal is talk about exactly that distribution. What would happen if we shrank the windows to zero? What would happen? So I'm just looking at the business from a kind of how-to perspective to give people hope that they can do it.
Mm-hmm. Sharing.
Yeah.
Yeah, giving it away. It's trite but true.
Yeah. And like this is fun for me. I'm learning a ton as I talk to different people about my own business and that my story is not that unique. You know, it might be unique in the details, but not unique in terms of how I felt.
You're providing a very valuable perspective because, you know, people in Hollywood are stereotyped all the time these days, and it's not accurate.
Especially now.
Most people, when
you Google producer now, it's probably Harvey Weinstein in handcuffs, which is not what we're about.
But
we're,
I just mean you Hollywood people.
Yeah, you Hollywood.
So few people are actually from Hollywood in Los Angeles. You're one of the few. I'm from Massachusetts.
First of all, I'm from San Fernando. I'm not from Hollywood.
My father worked for the gas company.
Exactly.
That's just what wakes me up because I figured I'm a kid from Long Island. You were born into it. No, you weren't.
By the way, you're from the comedy ground zero. You know how many comics are from Long Island? The fact that you didn't stumble into a comedy store with your accent and your look, I can do that.
I stumbled sideways, but
man, you were ground zero of comedy, and you too, by the way, in Boston.
Well, yes, the people of Massachusetts are very funny.
Yes,
per square inch, per mile, per square mile. Lots of funny people. My friends were all funny. It was
sick
good.
And funny. That's Long Island. Sick and funny.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Long Island for sure. Yeah.
But then you come to the big city because you realize there's something there for you, right?
Yeah.
But you're not from there. There was no such thing as Hollywood people or anything
and I, if somebody said, if they just saw us out and they would never guess that we're Hollywood people.
No.
I don't look like a stereotypical producer.
No. But I don't feel comfortable anywhere, so it doesn't matter. Villa d'Este, Hollywood, Massachusetts.
It doesn't matter. That's why you're funny.
That's why you're a car guy. You just lock the doors and go fast.
Right.
All right. You've been listening to Todd Garner. The podcast is The Producer's Guide. It's one of the top new podcasts here. One of the trending podcasts at Podcast One. Todd, thank you for coming
on.
Where can we catch up with you on social media?
I'm on Twitter, Todd_Garner.
There you go. Zuckerman, are you even on social media? You're on Instagram.
I'm on Instagram. That's it.
As
you
the real
you
Zuckerman.
Taught me. 2 years ago. It was 2.5 years ago.
Well, I look forward to seeing that 88, whatever you got, M3.
M3.
There, and driving it tonight. And I'm Spike Ferguson. I have most of the fun I have is on Instagram. So message me there, and I'll try to get back to you. Real quick before we go, here's some useful car tips you might not be aware of. A coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil can clean your interior. Removing excess weight from your car will improve gas mileage, and you can place your key fob to your chin to increase its range. That's pretty weird, right? Well, here's another tip you also might not know about. TrueCar also helps people get used cars. That's right. TrueCar isn't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with TrueCar, users can see what others paid so they know if they're getting a good deal before they're buying. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with TrueCar certified dealers. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out TrueCar and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. We'll see you next week on Spike's Car Radio.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio. Download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time, or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.